You're listening to the Jason Greger Show, presented by PlayAlberta.ca. Right now, use promo code SPORTS20. That's promo code SPORTS20 to get a free $20 bet at PlayAlberta.ca. David, you know, you're like a superstar player. You know, like, you can't come in and play 60 minutes right away. So you're basically the Kawhi Leonard of the station.
Yeah, thank you for having me. Yes, well, I'm more like one of the guys in the Black Aces who get to come to the games and skate in practice. And I'm just getting phased in over a couple of days, which is better than the alternative being phased out. And then I'll be back on the air Monday from noon to 2. But you're right, it is almost a year exactly to the day. It was May 25th of 2021. I noticed that my neck, the left side of my neck, did not match the contour of the right side. So I waited a couple of days. I noticed it shaving. And then I thought, rather than just sort of hope that this might not be something and leave it, I went to my doctor, which is probably the best advice I've ever given myself, which was get on it. And, I went to him not thinking for a moment that it would ultimately turn out to be a very serious form of cancer. But, you know, he came in, he took a look at me. Jay, you're sitting there waiting. And he comes in and he takes a look. He runs his hand down my neck. He sort of stands back, looks at both sides of my neck, and leaves the room really quickly and didn't say a word. Came back in. He goes, well, you might have a gland issue. I'll give you 10 days of penicillin. That should clear it up. Or you might have cancer. And I said, pardon? What was the second point? And he goes, you might have cancer. And then your mind goes to some pretty dark places pretty quickly. And he said, and I need you to get an ultrasound like today. So I left, did that, turned around the results really quickly. And then I went back in, and he wouldn't let me leave his office until he found a place that could give me a CT scan. And I ended up in Fort Sask at the hospital there very early one morning, just a couple of days later. And I got the results back on June 5th. I got a call, and funny how you remember the exact time, at 2:05 in the afternoon. And he said, my doctor said, you have cancer. And as I've said many times, and others have kind of paraphrased it, you get the call that you have cancer, and then you have to make the calls to tell your loved ones that you have cancer. In my case, I have three children who are all grown, my siblings, and then friends who I wanted to hear, from me directly. At that point, I didn't know quite, exactly the severity of it, but I knew that, they had found what turned out to be a 3-centimeter growth on where my left tonsil used to be. I had those removed many years ago when I was a kid. And it's, the very technical term is oropharyngeal cancer. My cancer is HPV, which is the sexually transmitted cancer. The doctor said the biopsy showed that it might have been in me as long as 40 years. And it was just sort of sitting there, biding its time and waiting for a place to land and do its business. And, I was at the U of A, at the U Nose and Throat, and was fortunate and blessed to be in the care of Dr. Vincent Biron, who was brilliant. We did a biopsy, and he said, hey, we got an opening July 30th at Yan. Now, Jay, imagine you're in a pandemic, and we know what all of that meant for the healthcare system. And then I find out I have cancer. It was an incredibly trying time. And, I know you've got more questions, but that's really the chronology of what happened.
David, I can't really imagine what it would be like, because, to get that call, hey, you've got cancer, because I think mm-hmm. most of us are always like, you don't want to go down that
sure.
road.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it was very quick for you, right? Like, when I'm listening to your timeline, we're talking like a month
Days.
From the first time to now.
Yeah.
And I remember when you went into major surgery, and your job is like, it's in an area where it really impacts your ability to do your job. You have to speak. Could you tell me about the...
Yeah.
You knowing something was wrong, and just how important that is. And for a lot of times, maybe as guys, we don't take the time to really look at ourselves to see if something's amiss.
Thank you for saying that. And I just want to echo what you just said. Early detection is not just a slogan. And women tend to be far smarter than us on many things. But in terms of being in touch and in tune with their own body, they just, seemingly, this is a little anecdotal, is that they seem to identify their issues quicker than men typically do. And I think some of that is bravado. Some of that is, I'll be fine. Now, Jay, imagine if I had a beard, I wouldn't have found this. I would not have located this. I felt fine. And so when I did, I you know, immediately got on it. And so I was very fortunate. But I can tell you that, you know, when I went to a follow-up, my first follow-up with my surgeon after, you know, and I'll tell you the details. I'll try not to be graphic because, you know, I know people are driving and they may have kids in their car. But if my surgeon said, you know, if I had not come in when I did, you know, this was moving. And he said, you probably had about a year if it went undetected. And so that's very sobering. You know, when I get the call, I mean, immediately I'm thinking, I mean, you know, I don't want to die. That wouldn't be fun. And I've got a lot of things I still want to do on this planet. I want to be part of my kids as they move into the next phases in their life. And they're, you know, I mean, you start going in that direction. And, but in terms of the surgery itself, Jay, you know, when I went in July 30th, it was about a 5-hour procedure, if I'm not mistaken. And what they did is they cut me open from behind my left ear to my chin. So that's a fair bit of real estate. And they, you know, opened me up and went about it, the business of doing what they did. And they didn't give me a tracheotomy. They put in they just kind of on the fly, you know, kept my throat and airway clear so they could do the surgery. And then they stapled me back up. Yes. And they stapled me back up. And so I still have and will have an impressive scar, which is a great conversation starter. But when I had to, after the surgery, I spent 10 days at the U of A and I had to relearn how to swallow. And, you know, they had speech therapists come in and help me with, because I couldn't swallow. I mean, because my throat's been badly damaged. You've got the scarring on the neck and the tightness and all the, and then I have paralysis on the left side of my face. I mean, we're almost 10 months out. We're 10 months from the surgery, almost a year from you know, that first doctor's appointment. And I still don't have all the feeling back in my face because the nerve damage that was done from the surgery, it's unavoidable. It's what happens. It's a byproduct of this. And then, you know, the complications around swallowing. And so you get out of the hospital after 10 days and go home, and you're looking at yourself, and I, you know, I won't be anything less than candid with you. I mean, I was shocked at how I looked. Yeah. My face looked like, and to a lesser degree now, like I've suffered a stroke. And so, you know, not only can I not eat properly, I'm visibly different in my appearance. And, you know, there was embarrassment, and you're ashamed to go out and you don't want to be around people. And, it was a very tough time. It's less so now because I'll never say I've got cancer figured out or my cancer figured out, but it is, it's really changed me, you know, in a lot of ways.
Soon. And so, Dave, thanks for staying with us. So you talked about, you know, seeing yourself in the mirror. And I want to focus on, obviously there's physical challenges, right? You're drinking out of a straw and all that sort of thing. But how did you get over the mental challenge? Because not only, you know, you said your face looked different, but you lost a lot of weight. You weren't eating. I remember the first time I saw you were like down to like 140 pounds.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's interesting that, and I'm glad you brought that part of our conversation up here. You know, I'm in a lot better place mentally than I was, and some of that is due to counseling. I was the people at the Cross, they really kind of look after you, you know, holistically. I went there for radiation, but I also received physical therapy, speech therapy, dietitian help, and you're right. I mean, I couldn't feed myself, and you say drinking out of a straw. I couldn't even do that, Jay. I mean, I had a feeding tube inserted through my nose. Sorry for getting graphic here. I didn't have it, done in my, so it was put through my nose, and that was, I hit a point in radiation where my body, I was so sick that in the radiation, what happens, and mine was cancer's head and neck, so what they do is they radiate my head and my neck, and specifically the area where the tumor was found, the left side of my neck, and so at session number 10, I would go 5 days a week, sick for 6 weeks. So 30 sessions of radiation treatment. Now, they're not very long, but man, they are intense. As one of the techs said, it's the worst sunburn you'll ever have, times about 20. And they weren't kidding. And so it starts out fine, and you sort of feel okay, go about your business. And then one of them said, are you at day 10 yet? And I said, no, but what happens at day 10? And they said, oh, you'll know. And when day 10 hit, I lost my smell or my sense of smell. my sense of taste. My neck got really tight. I mean, it still is. I mean, that's why I get treatment on it still. And then what happens from there, all of these effects cascade, Jay. And then you, in my case, I didn't eat, and I couldn't eat, and I wouldn't eat. I was actually becoming, one of my doctors said, well, it's almost like the effect of anorexia. And so I just, even the thought of looking at food made me want to be ill. And there was all sorts of other things going on. And so what happened was I was just, my body starts eating itself. And you start losing muscle mass, and not that I had a ton before, but, you know, I went in, I think when I started the radiation, I think it was 170 pounds, and I think my lowest I was 137. And it's not a weight loss program you want to be on, trust me. But the mental side of it, one day they asked me how I was doing, and I said, I'm not doing very well, and I think I need some help. And so they put me on the counseling, and it really was exactly what I needed at exactly the right time with the right kind of perspective. Because, you know, again, what I said in our first segment was, you know, I was ashamed of how I looked. If I went out at all, I would go out. You know, I'm probably the only person that said, you know, thank God we had to wear masks, because it would hide my feeding tube and it would hide how I looked. And my, you know, my neck. And so I was kind of, you know, sort of undercover, if you will. And I didn't go out much. And if I did, I would go, you know, to get groceries at 7 a.m. when the store opened, because I didn't want to run into anybody. And I, you know, I look kind of hideous. So that plays on your mind. It takes you to dark places. And I was in those dark places. And yet at the same time, I want to live. So, you know, and you get inspiration. You look around. I mean, you dig deep. You get help, and then, you know, there's, they say about cancer, Jay, it's the club nobody wants to be a member of. Yet that club is incredibly supportive. And, you know, I want to talk about a program that I got into on the physical side of things, but it's helped me mentally. But, you know, I look around and I see Ben Stelter and what Ben means to this community, what he's going through, and you see a young mom who's got cancer and she's got to look after kids and look after herself, and all of the stories that are out there, and you look, and, you know, for me, I get inspired by that. So if I'm having a bad day, you know, I don't have to go far to either talk to somebody. You know, you and I, we have friends, Bryn Griffiths and John Sexsmith, and they've been super supportive, and they, because they've traveled this path.
Yeah.
They know what it, they know how bad, you know, they call and go, you okay? You know, and I, of course, being a guy, I'd BS them, yeah, I'm fine. And they go, nah, I don't know if you are. I don't know if you are. And, you know, and it was a flag to get help, or, you know, you try and get to a better place, because you can go bad pretty quickly.
Dave Jamieson joins us. Yeah, I would think so. So good on those guys. And I think that's something that, you know, a lot of guys, we got a lot of texts coming in from people saying, thanks for sharing your story. You know, guys need to hear about, you know, looking at, you know, checking their body over just to see if anything's, you know, a little amiss. But more importantly, then, when one of you, just to say, hey, are you okay? And if your buddy says, yeah, I'm fine, are you sure?
Right? Push, like, a little more.
Yeah, yeah, you don't want to just, if you truly care about them, you know, I know it's hard, you don't want to pry, but at the same time, you don't want to just accept them, because, like you, Dave, like, why do you think you said I'm fine? What were you worried about when you said I'm fine, rather than opening up?
Well, you know, there's a vulnerability, I think, Jay, that and, you know, being, you know, I'm the son of a high-ranking military officer and the grandson of a high-ranking military officer. And so, you know, you shut up and go to work, and you don't complain, and you don't, that's not what, you know, I was programmed to do. So you largely answer with, I'm fine, you know, just be a good robot. And then when you're not fine, you find that, you know, it's a little more difficult to say, oh, boy. And I mean, you know, and I've done counseling at other phases in my life, but when I was at the Cross, I was asked specifically by one of the resident oncologists, she goes, you know, how are you doing? And I really wouldn't mind talking to somebody, and sooner than later, can you help me out? And she goes, yes. And they got me right into the counseling, you know, stream, and I was able to access that very quickly, was that, you know, I think, Jay, just to, it goes to vulnerability, and you don't want to show weakness. And at a time when I really needed help, and there were a lot of people that, you know, and you would shoot me a note, and other people would just check in, and that means, you know, for those out there who either, you know, have a friend or a loved one who is going through, you know, a struggle with an illness or cancer, those texts, those, you know, DMs, however, whatever platform you communicate on, really mean a tremendous amount, because it can get real lonely. Because you feel like, you know, because at the end of the day, you're in it, you have help and you have community, but you're in it by yourself. Nobody can put in the work to get me healthy other than, you know, my surgeon, my oncologist, and, you know, this other team around them who help me. But at the end of the day, I got to do the work. I got to get up and do, you know, in my case, all the jaw therapy and do, you know, and I want to just take a minute, Jay, to highlight a program here in our community that I feel so strongly about. It's called ACE. It's Alberta Cancer Exercise. They're based at Corbett Hall at the University of Alberta campus, and they're affiliated, you know, I was connected to them, thankfully, by a reference from our friend John Sexsmith, who'd been part of the pilot project and was one of the first people to take part in this. And I was referred and got connected to them. And what happened was, when I came out of radiation, I was a wreck. I mean, I was physically destroyed, done. And I went home and recuperated for about a month and a half. And then in early January, I get a call and they said, oh yeah, you qualify. You know, you need to be rebuilt. And I couldn't stand up straight. You know, the part of the physical, you know, the stuff that went into my surgery, Jay, when they cut my neck open, is all the nerves and muscles on the left side of my body. I lost about 80% strength on the left side. My arm was just hanging. And those muscles in the neck help you swallow. They're all part of a very complicated infrastructure. You know, we take swallowing for granted until we don't have the ability to do it. And so all of those muscles need to be rebuilt, and they're going to take a very long time. And so this ACE program, they work on my physical. I go twice a week. I just wrapped up my second session. And this program offers 12 weeks free to those who qualify, who are cancer patients. And you go and you work out at Corbett Hall under the, you know, watchful eye of their staff there. And they're, you know, they work with cancer patients. So they are, you know, eminently skilled. They know how far to push, when to back off, how much this individual can take in terms of physical rehabilitation. And they're a godsend. I'm not sure where I'd be without them, because my physical was, I mean, it was down to nothing, you know, and I've still got a long way to go, but it's got me on the path to, now I can see that I can get healthier. I mean, I won't be normal again because of the damage, but I can get to a place where I can lead a, you know, a life that I'm, you know, and I look different now, or look better. Still not able to eat, you know, the way I want to and hope to, but that's going to just take time, and, you know, a long time, sadly.
Well, I think you should start, Dave. I know you're a competitive guy. Just start having a push-up contest with Nilsson. I think you might be able to start.
Oh, God.
So,
well,
you can go there.
I'm probably would tap out pretty quickly, but I'll get there.
Now, Dave, this one might be tough, but I think it's important. Nope. And I appreciate your openness and candor. And, mm-hmm. You know, you talked about how, you know, the emotional part of it was very challenging. What about being a dad? Can you take us through the conversation? You have adult kids, but you're still a dad. When you're a dad, you feel like, hey, I'm supposed to be the protector. How did that conversation go?
Well, I have three children, Lindsay, Abby, and Danny. They're all in their, you know, ranging from, you know, 23 to 27. And I kept them apprised of what was happening right from the outset, like from that first appointment where I went in. And I wanted them to know right from the beginning. I didn't want to hide. So I wanted them sort of beside me, if you will, in terms of their knowledge. So when it got to June 5th and I had to make those calls, which are heavy, you know, after I get told I have cancer, I want them, you know, they're my first call.
Yeah.
And hearing their obvious fear, you can hear it. And then, you know, those are, you know, as I said earlier, you know, you go immediately to, you know, you're thinking the worst. And so yes, you want to be that strong parent, or, you know, and that, you know, I'll leave it up to somebody else to determine whether or not I filled that role. But I also wanted, most importantly, is to be honest. You know, and I told them, I'm scared. you know, I've lost a brother to cancer. My mother had multiple myeloma. My father had prostate cancer. My cancer, what I have, the oropharyngeal, is not connected to my genealogy or my family history. Okay. So this is unique, standalone stuff for me. But I was candid with him, Jay. I'm scared. Like I don't know what's going to happen here. You know, when they would drive me to the cross because I was too ill to operate a vehicle. And they would come in, and I wanted them to see what Dad goes through. You know, here's my mask. Here's my big, you know, mouth guard that I have to wear. And this is what I do. I lie down on a table, and these nice people strap me into this, you know, weird mask that covered my head and my neck and my shoulders. And this is what I do. And it looks like a tanning bed, but it really isn't. And so it was... It was as tough as you would imagine, but I thought, you know what? I've got them beside me. I wanted them to see the process. I wanted them to meet the staff who helped me, and then let's go through this together, and we'll be optimistic. And as I always say, I'm optimistic, but I'm also realistic because I'm not cancer-free. It looks very good right now. The PET scan, I was told it looked very good. My oncologist released me as his patient, which is always a good sign. You don't want to get return for more of this if you can avoid it. And so that's all good. All signs are positive, but I can't call myself cancer-free for a number of years.
J-Mo, man, you're an inspiration. Thanks so much for sharing your story. I know people are pumped to have you back on the air, ripping on people, mainly Iwanek, which will be fantastic. So that's good. Yeah. But in all seriousness, though, you know what, man, kudos to you. You always had such a positive attitude. I remember when you called me and told me. And I actually, you know, that was one thing, Dave. I thought that you were, despite you having the, cancer, you were very thoughtful for other people. Because I'll be honest, I'm an old school guy. Yeah. I didn't want to get a text like that. I got a phone call from you, and I never told you, but I appreciated that way more than just a text for me personally. So,
you know, Jay, I know you got to run, and you should, because people are on the Pink Oilers, and they should. They should be very proud of this team. But, you know, I wanted people that matter to me, and you're one of them, to know from my voice. And that's the old PR guy in me. You know, I'll control my message. I didn't want them, you know, I did tweet a couple of days later, but I wanted the people around me and in my world on a daily basis to know from me. Not to be melodramatic or anything, but here's what's happening. I want you to know, and I'll let you know as I go along what this process is going to involve, and, you know, love you, and we'll talk soon. And that's how I wanted it to be.
Yeah, well, I thought it was awesome, Dave, and I'm happy to see that, you know, you're still with us here, and I expect you to be here for a long time, and continued success. A lot of our listeners on the text line said they really needed to hear your story today. Some of them going through cancer, some of them are recovering, some of them are sons or daughters, and they didn't know how to talk to their parents, so kudos to you, Dave. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Jay, for the opportunity, and, you know, I'll say this, you know, my DMs are open, and if somebody ever wanted to check, because there were a lot of people that just, you know, didn't know me, but knew, heard my story, and they would just flip me a note, and with things about diet, and if you tried this, and, you know, that stuff, there's a community there that wants to lift people up.
Well, there's lots of people, Dave, that are big fans of yours, but also of your cancer program, your ICE you were talking about, and more. So I think that's for the ACE program. So thanks a lot, J-Mo. And
so, much,
so are you on the air next week?
Yes, I am. Monday, back at it, and which means, you know, we have 10 minutes in, and Iwanek will interrupt me, and off we go. We'll be arguing in moments, and it would just feel like I was never away.
Awesome. Thanks, Dave. Have yourself. And hey, the CFL's back, Dave. Jeez. Can imagine if you would have come on Monday with no CFL. Oh, my goodness. We'd have to have the we'd have had a 20-second delay for you.
Exactly. We'll talk soon, my friend.